friends, and welcome to this episode of Reimagining Justice, Texas Impact's special 10-part series on health equity. This series is part of our ongoing podcast, Weekly Witness, which equips Texans of faith for leadership and policy advocacy and civic engagement. I'm your host and Texas Impact's Outreach Director, Scott Atnip. You can find more information about today's episode, including blog posts and other resources, on our website at texasimpact.org/weeklywitness. If you've heard the expression, your lifespan should be the function of your genetic code, not your zip code, you've been introduced to the idea of health equity. In the past 10 years, media attention has focused increasingly on the reality that health status, longevity, and other indicators of physical and emotional well-being are functions of a complex set of factors, including race, income, intergenerational wealth, educational status, and more. It turns out that having health insurance and access to healthcare are just one piece of the puzzle. And health equity should be a primary concern for faith communities, because local congregations interact with vulnerable people through a variety of outreach activities, so we're well positioned to understand the connections between the many inputs that impact health. Things like access to healthy food, the availability of safe, affordable housing, and even proximity to sources of pollution. Those are all things we call social determinants of health, the things that drive health status. We hope this podcast series inspires you to learn more about health equity and the social determinants of health in your local community so you can be an effective advocate for a healthy future for all Texans. And I'm honored to be joined today by today's guest, who was a big hit at the United Methodist Women's Legislative event earlier this year, who's going to help us focus on maternal health issues, and that is Representative Sean Theory, representative from the 146th District in Houston, who just finished her second term in the Texas Legislature. Representative Theory, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, and it's a pleasure to be able to speak to all your listeners today about an issue that is, as you know, near and dear to my heart.
And I will say, I just want to say a special public thank you. We had a group of high school students from your district come to the Capitol this year, and they had such a great time visiting with you, and so I really appreciate the work that you did during the
absolutely. I was just looking at those pictures the other day with them, and I said to myself, I've got to get over to the school because I know they brought me that nice honey that they grow over there, and so I've got to get back over there and take a tour.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, you have to let us know how it goes. So as you know, we're doing a series, podcast series on health equity, and I wonder if you can start out today by just telling us what the phrase health equity means to you and how you see it in your work representing the most diverse city in the United States.
Absolutely. You kind of gave the big reveal on the lead-in. what we're talking about, honestly, you know, when we talk about health equity, is making sure that everyone has access to healthcare, but also within the same quality, so that the outcomes, the health outcomes, are the same. Because without health equity, what we see is another term, which is called healthcare disparities. Mm-hmm. We see lots of disparities in the treatment, and then the overall outcome. Particularly at the issue I've been talking a lot about is maternal care for women. But I mean, this ranges across the board. All of those social determinants that you've been speaking about, all of those, when there's an inequity, they lead to great health disparities.
Yeah, and so one of the things that we've been talking about is that even if people have the same access to healthcare, even if they have the same access to doctors, a lot of times their health outcomes won't be the same because of some of these other social determinants. And I know this idea isn't theoretical for you. You have I've heard you tell the story about a personal experience with health inequity in your life, right? And so I wonder if you might mind sharing that story.
Sure. And, you know, for those listening, as you said, sometimes it's not, a lot of times I'll say, we know that the incomes will affect the outcomes. So socioeconomic status.
Right.
So your income, unfortunately, in this country can still affect your outcome. But there are other intangibles and things that for me, with my personal experience, I did have quality health care. I had top notch health care. You know, I'm educated. I have a decent income. But my outcome was actually very traumatic when I was pregnant, about to give birth to my daughter. And that, from what I believe, had to do with another issue we're talking a lot about, which is implicit bias. towards African American women and patients when we are in critical care situations. And it's not always just critical care. Sometimes it's just a primary care situation. So my story is briefly, you know, I was 9 months pregnant and I went in to give birth, rather uncomplicated birth, but it was a little bit early. My water broke and they decided to give me a C-section. And unfortunately, the epidural was administered through a mistake too high in my spine. And I think that's called a high block epidural, I found out now. And instead of it paralyzing my lower half of my body, my legs, it was paralyzing my heart. The medicine was going up too high. So you can imagine, or probably you guys probably cannot imagine what that felt like, because I would never have known until I experienced it. So I literally felt like I couldn't breathe anymore. And though I was going into some form of a cardiac arrest, and I was telling the doctors, you know, I was in pain and I needed help. And, you know, quite a few were kind of negating that and saying, no, you're not in pain. You can't feel anything. And so we're going around and around. And I ended up just demanding that they put me under full anesthesia, because, which is frightening in and of itself, because, you know, what if I didn't wake up?
Right.
But I kind of thought that there was no way I was going to survive this level of pain if I were conscious. And so they did do that. And when I woke up, it was pretty another traumatic experience, because I didn't realize I already had the baby. They ended up giving me the C-section, where I was completely anesthetized. And so I have no memory of even having a child. So that was a pretty bad experience. But there were a couple of folks came and were apologetic to me, a couple of nurses, and told me what went wrong. And that basically I had saved my own life, because that is the only treatment for that, is to go under. When it comes to the disparity, I think this was just a buildup. Now that I look back, throughout my entire pregnancy, my doctor really just didn't really give me much time. You know, he would kind of blow me off. And when I would say things, he was very, very quick and dismissive. And this is one of the things I tell women, and I hope the viewers listen to this part, is that a lot of times, you know, you're so afraid in these situations of making the physician angry. So you become overly docile, even though technically at this point, we have to call it what it is. You're a paying customer at that moment. You're a paying customer. And I didn't correct him at times when he was being very, very flip and rude and sarcastic to me and literally hurting my feelings quite a bit. And now that I've read more, I've read these reports, and I understand this as a part of a larger conversation affecting, you know, women all around the country. Now I'm speaking out about it and hoping that we're able to do some things from an awareness standpoint, but also from a legislative standpoint that would prevent these type of situations in the future.
Yeah. So you, first of all, we're all glad that you're okay. How old is your daughter now?
She just started her first year of school yesterday, first grade. So
right.
She's six.
Congratulations.
Yeah, she's 6 years old now. Thank you.
Well, we are certainly glad that you advocated for yourself. And since then, you have been a leader on this issue in the state of Texas. I wonder how this experience motivated your work in the legislature.
You know, it's one of those things, you know, we're talking to the faith community, so you may just say it was divine intervention and
Amen.
Just meant to be. Amen. Seriously, I just, you never know where you're calling, you know, what you're going to be led to. And this report came across my desk my first term. I'd only been in office maybe a month. And it was findings of this maternal mortality and morbidity task force.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working late one night and I decided just to peruse and start reading it. And I was very shocked at what I found inside the report. I found out that women in Texas were dying at very high rates in childbirth. For those that were fortunate enough to live like myself, they were called near deaths. We had a lot of near deaths. And then we had high rates of morbidity, high rates of preventable disease for women that were in giving childbirth. And the other thing that no one was really comfortable talking about, and this is where we talk about the health equity and the disparities, is that African-American women were dying at 3 times the rate of all other women. And so that's when I started to do the deep dive. And I thought back about my experience, which I hadn't really, I'll tell you, I hadn't been sharing that story and talking about. And so I told myself I had to go ahead and start speaking about this in the hopes that it would help someone else. And that's when I started drafting legislation to look into this. I wrote a bill that will require a study to find out why the disparities exist. I had several pieces of legislation, and that first session, a lot of my bills passed, but then they all died off through some other political wrangling. And I wrote a letter to Governor Abbott and asked him that if we were to have a special session, would he put this issue back on what we call the call, the special mm-hmm. session call? And again, I'm a woman of faith. Everyone told me that was a long shot. It was a waste of time, that he would never do it just because of the political, we're on opposite sides of a political spectrum. But fortunately he did. He did grant my request. And we did put it on the call, and we were able back then to pass some legislation to extend the task force to complete some of the studies. And so now where we are, we have the findings back. Sadly, what we found out for the African-American component is that even when Black women, Black moms are similarly situated, meaning even if they have great health care, the same health condition as someone else, and in fact, even when they make more money and have higher degrees of education, they're still more likely to die than maybe a white counterpart who has Medicaid and has no education. The education piece, people mention it because they think that it'll affect your awareness in terms of your prenatal care. Mm-hmm. And so now we know that that variable has remained the same. So we have no choice but to look into where's the equity in that, and why is this happening?
And so is the next step to figure out why that is?
They're a little bit ahead of us on the game. What we know through their research, they have found that there are some, the term is implicit biases mm-hmm. that exist. Even the YWCA actually just calls it racism now. They said their goal, their mission now is to eliminate racism. And but these biases, I'll say, at times are affecting the protocols and the responses for patients and women of color. And so what we're hoping to do, and I'm excited about this, I will tell you the good news.
Yes,
I'll spread some good news. Through my work last session, this became part of a national conversation. It even became international. The BBC flew in and from Europe and filmed me laying out the bill. Everyone became interested in this issue. And now many of the hospitals in Harris County, where I live, and others throughout Texas are implementing what we call AIM bundles. And so they are standard protocols now that they're all going to follow for certain high-risk situations. For example, if a mom is hemorrhaging, they would follow a certain protocol. I thought that happened already, mm-hmm. But it didn't. So now we can eliminate some of these inequities and disparities, because if the doctors are going to follow steps 1 through 5, they're going to do that for whoever the patient is. You know, they should. It won't be, well, I'm going to let this patient, wait it out a little longer, maybe see if the swelling goes down. Let's see if her blood pressure goes down in 30 minutes, whereas the other patient may have been taken to the emergency room or ICU immediately. I'm hoping that by implementing these bundles, that things like that will change.
All right. Well, appreciate that work. And that's certainly good news. Why don't we take a quick break so we can say thanks to our sponsors.
You're listening to Reimagining Justice, Texas Impact's special podcast series on health equity. Texas Impact is Texas's oldest and largest interfaith advocacy network. We work for freedom, justice, and opportunity for all people. We advance public policies that are consistent with broadly held religious social teachings by mobilizing people of faith to talk to policymakers and to other members of their communities. To find out more and get involved, go to our website, www.texasimpact.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Reimagining Justice is made possible by the generous support of Methodist Healthcare Ministries of South Texas, serving humanity to honor God by improving the physical, mental, and spiritual health of those least served in the Rio Texas Conference of the United Methodist Church. Methodist Healthcare Ministries is a private, faith-based, not-for-profit organization dedicated to creating access to healthcare for the uninsured in South Texas through direct services, community partnerships, and strategic grant making. Reimagining Justice is also supported by the DentaQuest Partnership for Oral Health Advancement, revolutionizing oral health to create an effective and equitable system that results in improved oral health and well-being for everyone. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of Texas Impact and do not necessarily reflect the views of our sponsors. If you appreciate this podcast, we hope you will consider financially supporting Texas Impact with a monthly contribution. You can donate securely and easily on our website, texasimpact.org. And now, back to our program.
All right, welcome back, Representative Theory. Thank you so much for the conversation so far and for the work that you're doing. You are certainly a leader on this issue, and I wonder if you can talk to us about whether or not there were any other major advances in maternal health in 2019 in the Texas legislature.
Well, as we say, there's always good news and there's bad news.
Right.
Candidly, we didn't do what I would have liked to have seen this past session. There was a lot of talk about it, but a lot of the bills, you know, they had a good start and they didn't cross the finish line. None of the bills that I drafted for implicit bias training, this is so physicians and medical students will have cultural competency and implicit bias training so they can be aware of these issues. Those bills didn't even get hearings. They talk about that we need much more extensive data collection and a process to do this. I had a bill to create a statewide data registry, and this is for all women, all pregnant women throughout the state of Texas, where the records would all go through one kind of hub, one web portal. So we'd get the information in real time and we wouldn't be years and years behind on the data. That bill, I did get it out of the committee, didn't get it out of calendars. So there's more that needs to be done. We need more funding. There's, you know, it takes money. You know, we've got to increase money in the budget for the programs that we'd like to implement throughout the state. There was some federal legislation that passed, and if we can get matching dollars here in Texas, if we'll implement some of these programs, we can draw down on that. So there's a lot more to be done. I think what I will say that's great is I see women of all backgrounds, groups, nationalities, races, everyone joining together as allies, working on these issues. I mean, these are women, honestly, you know, as we can say, that chose life. And so it shouldn't be a political issue. Everyone, this is something that I think everyone should be able to wrap their hands, you know, wrap their minds around and hold hands together on this issue.
Well, I certainly would agree with you there. Looking forward to 2021, do you think you'll just refile those same pieces of legislation, or do you have any other hopes and dreams for the next session?
I'll refile those. I'll be looking for more. I know the data registry bill was, I worked very closely with the Texas Hospital Association on that. They made a lot of changes to it. They weren't really ready to commit, so we made it a kind of a study to look into it. I may change that back, and now that some time has passed, and say, hey, let's we don't need a study, let's get it going. I'm open to hearing from people, so I would love for other stakeholders to reach out to my office and call, because we're in the interim right now. For everyone that's listening, we will not be going back to session until January of 2021. So this is the time where we can drill down and do more work. And I also am going to town halls here in my own community and city, listening to women and encouraging them to take their healthcare into their own hands and to be advocates and, to increase their education about this. My grandmother, I'll tell you this, used to say she would be about 106 if she was still alive now. She looked to be about 90. She used to say, oh, when a woman has a baby, that's the closest she's ever going to get to death, because that's what they would say, you know, in the old days. And it just is shocking to me that now in 2019, we're still talking about that. Like that's still kind of ringing true. So our goal is to eliminate that in Texas and in the country.
That's interesting. And I appreciate that you said you really encouraged folks to reach out to you, because almost every one of the advocates or experts that we've had come on have talked about the fact that this is the time where constituents should be talking to their representatives about what they what they hope and dream for 2021. So I appreciate you extending that same invitation.
Absolutely. It's your house. You guys can write your own bills. I tell people, don't wait on us to write it. Don't wait on the lobbyists or whomever. You can sit down and write your own legislation and hand it in and just walk right up to your state rep and hand it to them.
So I wonder, I wonder if there's any other advice. Most of our folks might not be writing legislation, but what do you think people should be doing with their representatives and candidates for office during this interim period?
Call them and tell them what issues matter to you. You know, if it's school safety, that's another issue, you know, I'm very passionate about. You know, give them a call now and tell them what you expect of them. All of the issues that matter to you, your state representatives, your senators, we expect to hear from our constituents, and we're going to be grateful to hear from you. And so you can email us, you can call, you can ask for an appointment, speak to a staff member if the member is not available, and just tell them that what your expectation is and what your stance is, and ask how you can help. You'd be surprised, though. Our offices, our staffs are a lot smaller than people think.
Right.
And the budgets are small. So I always tell people in Houston, because I'm home in the district now, to come and please volunteer and help me out. And I've got a great group of volunteers. I go to local civic club meetings in the evenings, and they rally around these issues and help me move the ball down the field.
Well, let me ask you, because I know there are a bunch of people who will be listening to this today who will be passionate about maternal health issues. If they're going to talk to their representative somewhere else in Texas, what should the messaging on this be moving into 2021?
Tell them that this is everyone's issue, that this is not just, this is maternal health is affecting all families. So I've heard some of the other reps say, you know, it's just a small piece of healthcare that is a major issue in Texas. And that even though the report said that the numbers were lower than what we initially thought, the numbers are still high that warrant our attention in Texas. So that's one thing they need to know, a little bit on defense, because some people will say, oh, that was all a ruse. There's no maternal health care crisis. No, there is. The numbers are just lower, but they're still higher than other states. And so tell them that we want funding. You know, we want money allocated in the budget, the next biennium budget, to come in and to provide us the resources. There are all kinds of local programs where they can work with federally qualified health centers to provide treatment for prenatal care for women all the way to postpartum. And so that's what we're seeing is really important also. A lot of the deaths actually happen 30 to 60 to 90 days after giving birth, because women are leaving the hospital in a non-healthy state. Hmm. And they're not being followed up with their doctors.
Well, I want to give you a chance to close it out. So I wonder if you might just maybe give us a word of hope, something that provides you hope during some of these challenging times on some issues that are very important. Is there anything that provides you hope, or anything that you want to shamelessly plug before we close out today?
You know what I'll do? I'll tell you what I did. You know, it's funny you said this. So sometimes on Mondays on my social media, I do a Monday motivation. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get to do it yesterday, my Monday motivational, because it was the first day of school for my daughter and I was kind of busy.
Right.
So I did it. I posted it today and I said, I was just going to call it Terrific Tuesday. But I posted something that I'd heard about, this poem I'd read about a rose growing through concrete. And you know, and I told everyone who was listening that despite the odds and whatever you may be going through in life, that, you know, lean to your faith, look at your history, and just persevere. And, you know, you can always push through even when the odds are against you. And just like I said, if a rose can grow through a crack in the concrete with no soil, there's always a way to make it to the other side. And so I was just telling everyone, as they say, you know, lean not to thine own understanding. Just keep your faith and really let your soul and your spirit guide you to success. That's what I've done. It can be very lonely and overwhelming in this battle, in this fight, in the legislature. And a lot of times I just, you know, I just go into a safe space and I say, you know what? I'm not going to give up. And I just think about the people that are counting on me. So I tell everyone, don't get discouraged. You know, in the House, there's 150 members. I've seen UMW knocking on all those doors, walking the halls. and doing the work. And so just remember that each one touches one. It only takes one phone call, one touch, and you don't know how many lives you could be impacting and saving.
And where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at RepTheory146. You can find me on Facebook under my regular name, Sean Theory. And I also have a State Representative Sean Theory page on Facebook. I post quite a bit on Facebook because I'm able to share a lot of good articles and put more information. And I encourage everyone, to please follow me on social media. I'm on there quite a bit. I share, I'm an open book. I share as much as I can about my activities on there.
Representative Sean Theory, District 146 from Houston. That's T-H-I-E-R-R-Y.
I was just about to say that. I was about to say it's not like a science theory. I was going to say, I may need to spell my last name. Thank you for that.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time with us today. And more than that, thank you for being a leader on such an important issue. And I certainly think after the United Methodist Women's Legislative Event, so many people were touched and were inspired on this issue because you were willing to share your story. So I know you said towards the beginning that was something you hadn't been doing, but know that sharing that story has made a difference, and certainly the work you're doing in the legislature is impacting a lot of lives. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, and thank you all for the work that you're doing. I always say it's a blessing to be a blessing. And I appreciate you all very much.
Appreciate that. And thank you one more time. And thank you to everyone who has tuned in today. I hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. This is part of a series. And so we hope that you'll check out every episode of this Weekly Witness Health Equity podcast series. We'll be releasing more content next week. Until then, I hope you will rate and review the podcast and share the content with your friends so we can create a movement in the state of Texas, working to address health equity and maternal health issues. So make sure to share it with your friends and congregations. And if you've made it this far in the program, you clearly appreciate the content. So make sure that you and your congregations are members of Texas Impact. You can do that by going to texasimpact.org/join. Thanks for tuning in. We'll look forward to seeing you again next week. Until then, let's get to work.
Reimagining Justice is a production of Texas Impact and the Texas Interfaith Center for Public Policy, engineered by David Vassallo, executive producer Bea Moorhead. Our series is recorded in Austin, Texas.